This is the Millennial Movement Podcast, delivering you the most exclusive insights from the top entrepreneurs and influencers from around the world. Hosted by business owner and influencer, Ricky Nguyen. Now on to the show.
Yo, what's up, guys? You're now tuning into the Millennial Movement. I'm your host, Ricky Nguyen, and this is the dopest business podcast. Guys, today we have a very special guest on the show today, Brandon T. Adams. Brandon, how you doing today, my brother?
I'm doing awesome, man. I love the excitement. I'm ready to bring some wisdom and knowledge to your audience.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. You know, I always got to come out with the positive energy. I think that's like one of the biggest things everyone says, like, dude, I love your energy, Ricky. Like, you come out just excited, dude.
Energy is what attracts other people. So if you can put out positive energy, you're definitely going
to
succeed.
Hey, that's the mindset I'm going for. I try to push that out. So, you know, to open up to the audience a little bit more, tell them who you are and, you know, what you're doing. We're going to jump right into the questions, man.
Yeah. So my name is Brandon T. Adams. I got started in entrepreneurship ever since I was born. I worked in the family ice business. So I actually worked with my father in the ice business, and I got to learn what it's like to sell frozen water. And then I ended up going to college. And like I told you before, my life, there's two different chapters in my life. There's a chapter before reading the book Think and Grow Rich, and then a chapter after reading the book Think and Grow Rich. And that book, which is wrote by Napoleon Hill, and I think it was 1942, he interviewed over 25,000 people, and it shares the principles of life of success, to not only make money, but to have success in other areas. And he saw what it was like to find success in business, in life, and he saw also what it takes where people fail. He was interviewing people that had not had a successful life. And I learned from that. I learned what it took to really be who I wanted to be. And after reading that at 21 years old, I just never looked back. I went after my own endeavors. In 2012, I invented this product called the Arctic Stick to cool and flavor drinks. After about $100,000 of my own money invested in it, and 3.5 years later, I got the product on market. It sells on Amazon today. That endeavor, doing Arctic Stick, led me to this thing called crowdfunding to help people raise money on Kickstarter, Indiegogo. That crowdfunding experience for the Arctic Stick made me realize there was a need for experts to help people raise money. That led on to a journey of spending a year of my life dedicating to learning how to help people raise money. And I did it through podcasting. I started a podcast show in 2015. I traveled the country and interviewed people in their office and learned about crowdfunding and what it took to succeed. That led to helping a guy named John Lee Dumas raising, it was $453,000 in 33 days for his book, The Freedom Journal.
Okay.
And then my career was started, and I just started helping other people raise money. And I ended up using crowdfunding as a way to raise money for my own projects, my own TV shows, and it led me to what I'm doing today. So speaking across the country, advising at a high level for other companies. And we're releasing this year our TV series called Success in Your City.
Okay, so explain to the people who don't know, what is crowdfunding?
Crowdfunding is a way to raise money from the crowd. And there's different websites out there, like Kickstarter.com, Indiegogo.com. You can go on that site for free. You can create a project page, put a video and copy and details about your project. Let's say it's your business plan.
Yeah.
And you ask the crowd for money, basically ask them to back your project and help you fund your idea. And then what you're doing is, for example, when I had started, I needed money to finish creating my product, the Arctic Stick. So people were pre-ordering my product. So I had to hit a certain funding goal. And when they backed at certain levels, they actually would get first access to get my product. And then there was other cool features on there as well. So what happened is that money, they're pre-ordering the product. I used the money to create the product. They got first access to the product. I got to create my product. It was a win-win. So people go on Kickstarter and Indiegogo to raise money for their ideas and let the crowd decide if it should be funded or not.
Okay. So like when you're saying like the crowd, like, is it like with that website, is it more like towards like, I guess like angel investors or like just like
no,
the crowd
it's,
in general?
So it's like anybody. It's friends,
so like
family.
Anybody.
When people back your campaign, they don't get any investment. They're basically pre-ordering your product. they're pre-ordering your product and believing in you that you're going to create it and deliver on what you're offering. So some campaigns, they don't deliver. They get the money and then something goes wrong and they never actually can deliver the product. But the people that back that campaign know that that could happen. Okay. But the whole point of it is to get the audience, different individuals who believe in this project, and actually if they think it's a cool product or offer, they jump on it. And then what happens is the individual that creates a project uses that money to create their idea.
Oh, okay, understandable. So just kind of like using their like that money to create that person's idea come to life, right?
Yep.
Okay, so going back, you said, you know, we were kind of talking before the show as well. You said podcasting was a pivotal point for your career. Explain to the audience why, like, that was, you know, your pivotal point.
Yeah, so I started my podcast show. It started as called The University of Young Entrepreneurs, February 8th of 2015. So I was doing a Tuesday solo show and a Thursday guest show. And for a year and a half straight, I was doing two shows a week. And then I did three shows a week. And then I ended up going to doing shows whatever I wanted. But I'm 4 years in now, almost 400 episodes. And why podcasting has been pivotal for me is, for one, it was my way to connect with influential people. I mean, you don't just tell somebody, hey, I want to pick your brain, because they hate hearing that. It's like, hey, I would love to have you on my show, and I will promote you to my audience. Even though at the beginning you don't really have an audience, but hey, you're starting somewhere. So what I would do is I would interview these people, and at first I went literally to their office. Like, I travel all over the country, and I would drive 10 hours to get a 45-minute interview. And I would interview these people, and I'd build a relationship. And I knew eventually down the road that I would work with these individuals, which a lot of them I did. Right. And so I was building connections. I was building an audience. I was becoming a better interviewer. It helped me become a better communicator and speaker. And I had this platform that helped me achieve the things I wanted. But also, some of the people that I had on my show, I'll give you a couple big examples. One guy that I had on my show was Louis Forman. He had this, he was the guy that created Inventor's Digest. And at the end of the show, I always say, how can I help you? And I offered to help him, but he said, hey, maybe I can get you in my magazine. Well, long story short, that podcast show led to me getting on the cover of his magazine.
Wow.
So that was a win from podcasting. The experience I had when I had John Lee Dumas on my podcast show, I said, hey, how can I help you? I'm a crowdfunding expert. He said, I'm actually thinking about doing a crowdfunding campaign. And that podcast show led to 5 months later launching one of the largest crowdfunding campaigns in history for a book. So always at the end of every show, I would build this connection with the person I had on the show, but also what I would do is I would see how I could help them. I'd offer to help them, because if you share your knowledge and, hey, here's who I am, here's what I can do for you, I would love to help you. They won't always take you up on it, but if they do, it could lead to something really big. Mm-hmm. So that was what started my career. And I mean, a lot of the first 100 episodes I did for my show, heck, those individuals ended up being the people that spoke at my first ever event.
For real.
So I love it. It was a way to build connections and relationships and deal flow.
So you would actually drive like 10 or like 10 hours just to go interview someone?
Oh, once I drove all the way to California Iowa. So 24
Iowa.
Hours.
That's like across the states, man.
Oh yeah. I did a podcasting tour once. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people, they make excuses like, I can't get there, I can't afford it. I once did a 9-day podcasting tour and trip. I went to California, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Colorado, all around. And I did it for less than $1,000. I slept in my truck every single night.
Wow.
I had canned food that I ate. And I was eating $5 footlongs when I felt like I was going to really be good to myself, you know? And people thought I was crazy. I was actually editing my podcast shows in my truck. But it was my way to get it done, to do it. And also, I obviously do a lot of interviews online. But the best podcast interview you can do, the best way to get in connection is in person.
Yeah.
I wanted to make my interviews in person. And that's what I did. And that's what made me stand out. And that was literally what started my career. Because, I was looking at – one of the first interviews I did was with a guy named Chris Hawkins. Hawker. And how I got introduced to Chris Hawker was I saw him on a video with Lewis House, which is a podcaster that I've always looked up to and now I'm friends with. But Lewis had got mentored by Chris Hawker. Chris Hawker was somebody who was an inventor. At that time, I had the product that I invented. I wanted to interview him. Mm-hmm. So I drove all the way to Ohio. I was in Iowa. So I don't know if that was 12 hours, whatever it was. And he was just amazed. Like, you just drove all the way here to interview me? Like, yeah. So that interview and that connection is so funny because a year ago, so that would have been 3 years later from doing that interview, him and I actually worked on a project together. We both flew to XPRIZE in California, and we consulted with XPRIZE to do a fundraise. Mm-hmm. And it's just so cool because 4 years prior, we've been strangers. 3 years prior, I mean, we literally, three years later, we went to do a project together. And it's because I interviewed him for the podcast show. And it's because I built a relationship with him. So it's just crazy where things go if you can really add value to people, build a solid connection, and just keep showing up.
You know what? I was actually going to say this because, like, I love, like, exactly what you said, like, exactly what I do not love about it is because, like, I will put in, like, people say, like, you could put in, you can make excuses or you could put in the work. And, like, you can choose. You can't just have both. And, like, Dan Fleischman. You ever heard of Dan Fleischman, right?
Oh, yeah, I know Dan.
So you know Dan, right? So, yeah, so he's out in California. I'm down here on way down below you. I'm in South Carolina. So I'm, like, in the South.
Nice.
Right? I'm in the Carolinas. So I had an interview with him early on the show, within last year, early in my career. So first time I had an interview with him, he was out in L.A. And I was like, you know what? His assistant asked me, is this going to be an audio or a video? I was like, how about this? I actually want to come out there and interview him in person. I said, it's the best way. I think it'd be the best way to connect with him, to get that interview in person. And then, like, literally, I booked my plane ticket. I flew out there just for an interview, interviewed him. And, like, he was, like, really genuine. Like, he was really surprised as well about it. Like, you flew all the way here from South Carolina. And another person I interviewed, his name is Jokes, as well as a rapper. He's in Santa Monica. So when I went up there to go to his show to interview him, 4 years prior to that, I was in a network marketing company called Vimo, when I was telling you about, and he was also in the same company, and he wrote a song for the company. So I always looked up to him when I was 14 years old, and then when my friend said, you actually know a rapper out here, you could probably get an interview with him. And I said, who? He's like, Yokes. I was like, yo, I think I know him. I heard him when I was, like, younger. Like, I used to listen to his music. And then from there, just kind of connected with him, being able to go to his show, meet him in person, but then have a podcast interview with him, and now, like, we're working together. We're talking on a daily basis, but we're building that connection and that friendship, just like you were saying. Like that,
I think that wouldn't happen if you wouldn't have took the leap to fly all the way to California for that interview.
Yeah.
Most people would have thought you're crazy.
Most definitely.
But those are the things that you do to build those solid connections, and I learned that early on. And you were very smart to meet Dan in person because he's the youngest guy to be a part of an IPO for a company. He's very successful, a great guy. Very connected. Yeah, if you get opportunities like that to interview those people, you take them. A lot of people, they make excuses or I can't make it work. Dude, these are people that can help you open doors you could never imagine. And I knew that early on, and I did the same thing that you did for that, which kudos to you because not many people are willing to do that.
Yeah, one of my biggest mentors actually, like, the clothing for designers, like for big comedians, like the Kings of Comedy, like D.L. Hughley, Cedric the Entertainer, Eddie Griffin and stuff. His name is William Wilson. Shout out to William. But, you know, Bill, I drove to Charlotte, and, like, he was like, yo, no one's, like, drove 3 hours for an interview. He was, like, he was really surprised about that as well. And now being able to go to a celebrity golf tournament this May and connect with him, his network, I was like, dude, this is just amazing because, like, I would never just think about this, but being able to network and, like, just kind of visualizing it, like you said, it's like now I can kind of see the things coming, you know, to reality as well. But I want to talk about, you know, you're the youngest person to be featured on a film, Think and Grow Rich. How did that feel when, you know, you kind of found out, but, you know, when you were the youngest person?
Yeah, I mean, I 2016 is when I first had the opportunity to be a part of the movie Think and Grow Rich: A Legacy. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I got to be a part of it is because I had the expertise in crowdfunding. Okay. And they needed to raise money. So when I first heard about the project, it was 4 months later that we launched a crowdfunding campaign. And we made it the largest crowdfunding campaign in history for a docudrama. So we raised 370 grand. And so obviously I was obsessed with the book and I wanted to help. Not only did I help them raise money, I end up becoming a part of the movie, associate producer of the movie. And now, I mean, I'm just announced I'm going on the Think and Grow speaking tour, which we're in like 16 cities this year. But it was a great feeling. I'll tell you, when I did get interviewed in that day and I realized, well, I am the youngest guy. The closest one to me next was a Joel Brown. I think he's a year and a half older than me or something. Okay. And just the fact that I had looked up to this guy named Napoleon Hill, who's dead now, but the book he created and how it changed my life. And it's, I mean, it's been sold over 130 million copies.
Yeah.
And the fact that I got to contribute to his legacy and help share the message and take it from a book to a movie, the first individuals to do that, that was a huge success in my life and something I'll never forget. And to be the youngest guy, and it's pretty cool. I would consider myself a little bit of a Napoleon Hill of our time. I'm always every day communicating what he's done, but it's cool to be a part of it. I'm excited for what's to come in the future with it. And you know, you look at all these books out there that you read, a lot of them derive from Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
You know, for me, any book that I ever will put out, there's going to be inspiration from Think and Grow Rich in that because I've learned everything from that. So you think about all these other books. If you read them, you'll notice it's the same kind of concepts of Think and Grow Rich, but also they refer back to Think and Grow Rich. Even Robert Kiyosaki and Rich Dad Poor Dad talked about Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
So all these books that these people were inspired by this individual who did this. It's so cool to see what one man can do.
That's and that's a really big personal achievement for yourself. I know that for sure. What's it like for being like, you know, working with the Napoleon Hill Foundation though?
It was amazing. I mean, we still obviously like some of the, I got to meet Napoleon Hill's grandson at Napoleon Hill Day. So we were actually, they brought us up in front of everybody at Napoleon Hill Day. And it was cool to be a part of that group, the individuals. And we even did an interview there. And it was in Wise, Virginia. But the foundation's amazing. Everything they're doing. Don Green is doing some amazing things with the foundation. All the people around that. Like, I'm looking forward to meeting them here in a few months on the tour because they'll be speaking too. But it's just a great program, a great group of people. And them allowing the individuals to create the movie, because you have to actually have to go through the Napoleon Hill Foundation. It's just awesome to see. And I just look forward to seeing what is going to come in the future from everything with the whole Think and Grow Rich program, but also the foundation.
Yeah, most definitely. He's one of my favorite authors of all time. For real. I'm, like I was telling you earlier, I'm actually reading one of his books for the audience, The Magic Ladder to Success. But yeah, so you're also a co-host of a TV show, Ambitious Adventure, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that was actually during the same time I was doing for Think and Grow Rich.
So all Adventures going on at the same time?
Yeah, I was doing a lot of things at the same time. That was as an entrepreneur, I realized that I couldn't do too many things at the same time after going through all that.
Uh-huh.
But while working with for the movie for Think and Grow Rich Legacy, I was also not only doing that, but I was helping the TV show Ambitious Adventures. Greg Roulette, who had the idea for Ambitious Adventures, came to me and he said, well, I need help raising money for it. So I helped him raise the money.
Another
and I became his co-host.
Project.
Yeah. Yeah. So we traveled the country and interviewed people for the show. So we ended up filming, season one. We went to different cities. So we were in Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa. I had to come to my hometown area at the time. So Des Moines, Iowa, we went to La Crosse, Wisconsin. We went to Hollywood, California. We were in Florida. And some of the people we interviewed, Lewis House, Jack Canfield was on the show. We had Jake Paul. Who else did we have? We had a lot of Kevin Harrington, Caleb Maddox. We had a lot of great people that we interviewed. But it was fun. It was my first real TV show experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing show. We got on the Entrepreneur Network. And then we got on Facebook Watch, and now it's on Amazon Prime today. And we got to meet some amazing people, and it was my first ever TV show that led to doing, well, now this TV show I'm doing today, and also I ended up doing another show. So I'm so thankful for the opportunity to do that and what that show has done to impact other entrepreneurs.
And how's that been able for, you know, to just travel around the country just to see so many young entrepreneurs making an impact?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's the fact that you look at your younger self, yeah. People that you see. I mean, I remember when I was 19, 20, 21 years old, 22, 23, the things I was doing and grinding and working to make things happen.
Yeah.
I look back on that, and as I get to travel the country now and see my younger self, see other motivated people and see what they're doing and interview them and help them and have them look up to me for what I'm doing in the TV space, it's a great feeling. It's like a dream come true because I've been in their shoes and mm-hmm. I'm still grinding too. Like there's a lot of things that we're working on right now. You're always on this journey of entrepreneurship, but if I can take the things I've experienced and the sacrifices I made and take that and teach it to others to help them so they don't have to go down the same obstacles, that's a win for me. So I really enjoy it. I'm thankful for the journey I have and the opportunity I have as a TV producer and host.
That's awesome. What were you doing at 19? I just want to ask that real quick.
Honestly, man, I'll be real with you. 19 years old, I was motivated. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of, I don't know, I was really, I don't know, kind of cocky. I played, so obviously I went to college at 18. And in high school, I played football and I was a guy that drank and had fun. And I was jock. And then once I went to college, I just drank a lot. So my first semester of college, I got a 1.68 GPA. I got kicked out of the dorms 4 days prior to the school year.
Wow.
And I was like almost dropped out of college. Second semester, I kind of locked in, it wasn't until like 20, 21 years old when things changed after Red, Thick, and Rich. But honestly, I was drinking. I was living for the moment. Heck, I went to jail a few times. I just partied. Like yeah. My ambition for business that I have now, at that time, it was my ambition to throw massive parties and try to make yeah. money. Actually, I was selling alcohol. I was selling moonshine to make some bucks. But that's what I was doing. So the fact to see you at 19, you're way ahead of the game because at 19, I was. I had fake IDs and I was doing bad things.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Well, I'm not that good, man. I'm not going to lie. I was in college. I dropped out. I couldn't do it. But I did some things. Like I was trying to make money in college. I don't know if this is right, but I used to sell my answers to other college students. You know, I was a smart kid. So I would be that one.
I would be the one buying them.
Yeah, right? I'll be the one that's selling them. I'll be the completely different opposite. But I can see. I was going to say, I know you got the title King of Crowdfunding.
Yeah.
I could see why. You have so many projects going on. Like, how did you kind of earn that title?
It's funny. In 2015, while I was doing the podcasting, I ended up going on TV, morning shows across the country, because I found out that when you go on TV, people see you as this expert, and you're building your brand. And I didn't know the term, like, building your brand at the time. I was just getting myself out there. And I went on probably 20, 30 morning shows in 2015. And I would fly to these different cities, go on a 3-minute segment, and then get back on a plane and fly back. And one of the shows I went on in Phoenix, Arizona, it NBC 12 News, Phoenix, Arizona, actually went on 2 morning shows in 48 hours when I went to that city. But NBC 12, the title, the lady that before I went on said, it said how to be crowned the king of crowdfunding, or how to be crowd something. And ever since then, I always called myself the king of crowdfunding. And then it just stuck. Everybody started calling me the king of crowdfunding. Yeah. And people would be like, hey, Brendan T. Adams, you know him? He's the king of crowdfunding. At that time, I literally had one campaign under my belt. Like I was branding myself as a king. And everybody else raised more money than me. But I remember I saw one of the interviews I did. I'm like, I've raised $25,000. I'm like, I've raised millions now. Uh-huh. And it's funny how I was really kind of faking it until I made it, but building my brand. And then it became the reality, you know? So that's how I got it. It's somebody said it on a morning show, and I just kind of ran with it.
Yep. Hey, you give your own titles, though. So, you know, what's the first step for someone starting a business who doesn't have money? You know, you've been able to build a lot of businesses, but invest in a lot of businesses as well. So can you kind of give your two cents on that?
Who doesn't have money?
Yeah.
Yeah, just start. The biggest thing people say is they don't have the money, mm-hmm. Or they don't have the time. The money is the thing I get a kick out of because I've been there and I've said that. And crowdfunding was my way to like realize it doesn't matter. You can figure a way to raise the money. Mm-hmm. So I would say start from what you have, whatever it is, create something of value and sell it. Heck, you could sell it before it's even created. And once the people pay you, like you can create it for them and add massive value. But just start somewhere. You gotta start somewhere, sell your services. We live in a world now with social media, technology. You can sell your knowledge. You can sell your advice. You can sell do-it-yourself product. Like you can sell anything.
Yeah.
And knowing that, there's no excuse. If you tell me that you can't do something because you don't have the money, that's BS. Because there's always a way to figure it out. I've never made excuses. I always found problems that I could solve. I always found a way to get to where I wanted to go. And for somebody starting out, find a great mentor. I would say what I've always told people, I give this advice a lot. Find somebody who's already achieved what you want to achieve and find a way to add massive value to them. Get them as a mentor. So the best way is helping them get to their goals, that individual who's achieved what you want to achieve, help them make money, or heck, be an intern for them. Work for them for free. Mm-hmm. Like I see a lot of millennials like, oh, I got to get paid or this. I'll tell you, if you want to really get to the making massive amounts of money and getting paid what you want on a very quicker scale versus getting paid the regular rate, is go find a very influential company, a company that you would love to be a part of, and offer to work for them for free and show your value. And then after you show your value, then you can get a lot more than what you would have got going into it. And also you have connections, you have relationships. So that I would say, find somebody who's already achieved what you want to achieve and follow in their footsteps, learn from them, get an opportunity to work with them, and just start. Stop waiting for the right time. Stop waiting for the money to be there. Just start. Yeah. Just do things. You're going to fail a lot. The most successful entrepreneurs are people that have failed way more than everybody else. You know, people see their successes, but they don't see all the failures they had. Mm-hmm. I've had so many failures. I had so many obstacles. So I still see them. Mm-hmm. But every time I have that, I realize, okay, don't go there again. You got to go the next step. So you got to put a lot of things out there and try a lot of things. Eventually something will stick.
Okay. And how old are you, Brandon, again?
I'm 29 now. 29. It's crazy to think I'm 29 years old, man.
Man, so when you just kind of got into, like I would say, entrepreneurship space, you're just talking about, you know, like a lot of entrepreneurs, they have a lot of failures. How much failures are, say, how many years did you kind of see you went through that phase of failure before, you know, that one thing hit for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, you're always – it's a weird thing calling it failure because I believe every obstacle, every
learning experience.
Failure learning experience. Is like a stepping stone towards like stepping your success.
Yep.
But I've had so many. Mm-hmm. I mean, heck, I've had some in the last year. Like I'm always having them. Yeah. It's just how you face it and how you deal with it. And as you advance your career and you start doing bigger things, you're going to have even bigger obstacles. And you're going to constantly have these bigger obstacles. You just got to learn to take care of it and move forward. And I guess for me, I look at anytime I have an obstacle or a failure, I think to myself, okay, it's happening now, but it's only temporary. If I just keep going, I'm going to succeed, which always do. So just keep going and ask yourself, well, if this is going to affect me 3 months from now, 6 months from now, or it's not going to kill me, then it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
So people build up this whole like perception of what the obstacle is and they like think they're doomed. Mm-hmm. But it's really not that big a deal. It's not that big a deal. It's just life. And you know, everybody else is going through the same stuff. I would say one of my biggest first obstacles and failures was when I was 24 years old. I went to start a company with my wife now in a different city, and we went to raise a bunch of money. And we had money lined up for the company. We moved to the city, and we turned down the money I for my own personal reasons. And we basically went from going to start this company to not moving forward with the company, spending all these months on this business. And we decided, well, we're not going to do it anymore. So we had to like eat our pride, turn down the money. and we didn't even know how we're going to pay rent that next month. And what I did the next month is we did a crowdfunding campaign, which led to the beginning of my career. So that was that failure, that obstacle is a blessing in disguise, because if that wouldn't have happened, it wouldn't have led me to being the king of crowdfunding. It wouldn't have led me to having a TV show. It wouldn't have led me to where I'm at today. So I always ask myself, when these things happen, okay, what's the reason for this happening and how is it going to make me better?
Okay, the king of crowdfunding. All right, yeah. So where did Arctic Stick, the idea come from? Yeah, I know you started at Iowa State when you were back in college, but where did that idea initially come from?
Yeah, so it came from I grew up in the ice business. So my dad sold packaged ice, like bags of ice. And one day I was on the ice route, and
I bet you're
I wanted
used to
keep
the cold now, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to keep a bottle of beverage colder for a long period of time. And if you try to put ice cubes in like a pop bottle or something, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I want to think of something that can make it easier to cool this drink, put in a thing of ice, but also if I want to flavor it. Mm-hmm. So that idea led to this invention, which is basically a plastic tube that holds liquid. You can freeze it, but also you can use it as a dispersing of flavor or even alcohol. And that concept turned into Arctic Stick. So it came from the obstacle or problem I saw while delivering ice one day. And 3.5 years later, it became a reality. We manufactured it. It's, you can buy it on Amazon. But yeah, it's crazy to think where that idea turned into.
So be honest, Brandon. Did you make the idea so you could make a liquid ice alcohol beverage?
I mean, I'll tell you, a lot of mixed drinks have come from that. I mean, how I use it today is I'll put a shot of vodka in it to mix a drink, or just use it for mixing my drink. Yeah.
Now we know why you started the idea. So Arctic Stick is on Amazon right now, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you pitched this idea on Shark Tank back in Des Moines, right?
Yeah, Des Moines, Iowa. Yeah, it was Shark Tank casting. It wasn't on the actual show.
It was a casting.
So Shark Tank casting, which it was where you go and pitch prior to get on Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. There was hundreds of people there, and my wife and I went and pitched. We were just dating at the time, and I actually went in front of the line, and I saw there was a bunch of cameras there, so I gave my pitch to everybody in line. And people were laughing at me and all that. But it's funny because that got me on the cover of USA Today. And also it led to them like having us stay afterwards. And then they filmed us doing our pitch again for a potential commercial. We never got asked to come back to go on Shark Tank. But that experience got me a lot of publicity. And I met some great individuals from that.
So you got the publicity crazy. From people laughing around, like when you were pitching your idea from people laughing?
Well, I got the publicity because the news reporter was right by there.
Oh, okay.
They saw it, and then they interviewed me. And then that interview that night got on USA Today.
That's crazy. I didn't know, like, the publicity game, you could really, like, outsource in so many different ways like that.
You got to be smart. Like, mm-hmm. Some people thought I was nuts, crazy. I saw a camera over there, over in the corner. I saw this reporter, and I knew if I did something that was very – I mean, yeah, like I'm like, I didn't even know what I was doing. But I'm like, if I did this, it would make me stand out from everybody else that was in line. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, how am I different than anybody else in line? There's 300-400 people in line with like ideas.
Yep.
Ideas are nothing without somebody pushing behind it. People buy into you. Not only your idea, they buy into you as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I like what you just said there. It's just because – like you say, people don't buy to you, but they buy to entrepreneurs. Like, I just had an interview too, and like I kind of understood what he was saying, like in the message. Like, you know, people aren't supposed to be attracted to you. They're not supposed to understand or listen to you. You have to make them want to understand and get to know you. You have to get them to be attracted towards you. So I kind of definitely believe what you're saying. But when you were in there, what was the atmosphere like? Just being in the room, what was the atmosphere like?
When I was doing the pitch for everybody,
yeah.
Some people thought I was smart. Some people were actually mocking me the rest of the day, and they gave me rolled their eyes, which whatever. It's funny because two individuals that were in the front of the line, their names are Philip and Angelo Campos. They have the company Tres Mentes Salsa. They saw it and they said they'll never forget that day. And they said, we want to work with him someday. And they became really good friends, and we collaborated on ideas now. But who cares if people think at the end of the day? It's just our opinions.
Most definitely, man. Well, what could we expect to see from, you know, you, from Brandon in 2019?
Yeah, you can see we're focused on the release of our TV series, Success in Your City, which is redefining how people look at success. We filmed season one last year. We already won a few Emmy Awards for the promotion of the trailer of our show, and then also a documentary did, which was part of the show. So that's releasing this fall. We're going to do theater premieres, and also I'm still in contact with talking with networks. Our ideal release would be on Netflix, but it's up between Amazon Prime, Hulu, or Netflix. So you can see that later this year, but also people can go watch the trailer by going to successinyourcity.com.
So how's it? So you have an Emmy under your belt now, huh?
Yes.
How's that for having an Emmy under your belt?
Right here.
Hey, look at that. Okay, how's it feel?
There's a proof, so it's not fake.
How's it feel to have an Emmy, man?
Feels great. You know, it's I'll tell you, for Ambitious Adventures, we got nominated for an Emmy. Uh-huh. And when we went to the awards, nothing hurt more than when they didn't call our name and we didn't win.
Yeah.
So that moment made me realize I need to work harder and go all in. And exactly a year later, we won Emmys. It felt good. It's honestly, it doesn't just relate for – it's not just an award. I mean, mm-hmm. Emmy, I believe, because it's such an accomplishment for that industry, I think it shows you as an individual have been able to accomplish something of that stature through your hard work, your perseverance, and your dedication to what you're doing. And we had definitely earned that. I mean, we dedicated our entire life to this show, and it felt really good. My wife and I both won. So because we're co-hosts and co-producers of the show, so it validated that, hey, we did achieve something very significant. And I don't know, it's a great feeling, especially when they call your name and you go up and you're on stage. It's like, you don't know what it feels like unless you go do it.
I just can't explain the feeling. I don't even know the feeling, so I can't say anything. But how many seasons are out of Ambitious Adventures right now?
So Ambitious Adventures, we did one season, and then we discontinued. I mean, you can still watch the show today.
You can still watch
it. Success in Your City. So I transitioned to Success in Your City, which season one will come out this year, and then we'll look to go into production later at the end of this year, early 2020.
Okay, so they can expect to see this next, like within like early 2020?
So you can expect to see this one in 6 months. It'll be out this fall.
Okay, awesome, awesome, man. Well, we're kind of coming to the end of the show today, Brandon, but before we leave, man, we do a takeaway for our guests. Now, what would your advice be through the ups and downs and struggles that you had to go through to be where you are today?
Just keep going. Surround yourself with the right people. Who you surround yourself is ultimately going to determine where you go. If you're around positive people that already have achieved what you want to achieve, you're going to get there. But if you're around people that are just kind of like going for it, but they're not really going for it, you're just going to become them. So surround yourself with the right people. Just keep going. Find great mentors. Invest in yourself. And just eventually one day you'll get to where you want to go.
Great, man. Well, dude, I really appreciate you, taking time for being on my show today, bro. Just sharing your tips with me and the millennials. You like to tell where they can find you at on social media?
Yeah, just at Brennan T. Adams all over Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you name it, at Brennan T. Adams. And if you want to see the trailer of our show, go to successinyourcity.com.
Okay, awesome, man. Well, thank you for tuning in to the Millennial Movement. Until next time, guys, we're out. I work hard every motherfucking day. I work hard, I work hard.